Welcome back to B2B Podcast Field Guide, the show that helps you launch and grow a successful business podcast. Today, I speak with Lucy Mann, the founder of Gunpowder Consulting and the host of Small Spark Theory, helping agencies solve their new business challenges. I wanted to speak with Lucy because she's been running her own podcast now for over 6 years. She delivers roughly about one a month at the moment. She doesn't do any other marketing really apart from the podcast. And the show has been the source of so much value for her and her community. So I wanted to see what we can learn from her experience and what she's done right and what she, if she was doing it all over again and starting again now, what she would change. So we talked about how the show has helped her with thought leadership and authority within the industry, how it's helped her grow awareness and engagement, the impact it's had on relationships with existing clients and partners, and the direct and indirect benefits in terms of lead generation and conversion as a result of the podcast. You know, Lucy just has so much wisdom to share about podcasting and agency growth more broadly. I learned an absolute ton from this conversation. I'm sure that you will as well. I'm actually a subscriber of Small Spark Theory, her podcast. So it's really interesting to hear how she thinks about it behind the scenes and kind of what is needed to make it happen, to make it a reality. So I thought it was an absolutely fascinating conversation and relevant to anyone else that's thinking about starting on this journey. So this is old, this is new, this is influence. Lucy Mann, welcome to This Is Influence.
Thank you, Nathan. Thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
Lucy, I'm super excited to speak to you about podcasting. This conversation is going to go in many different places. You have a fantastic podcast yourself, Small Spark Theory, which I've been listening to for years and actually really inspired me and almost put me off starting my own podcast, but also inspired me on my journey as well. I'll come back to that a little bit later. But you started your podcast in 2017. I think you started thinking about it in 2016. The podcast is really a staple. It, for any agency focusing on new business, it is an absolute must listen to show. And I'm sure that you've got mainstream awareness among most of the agencies in the UK, if not internationally, that you want to be speaking to. I think you've done so well with the podcast. And I think and I hope the podcast has done really well for your business as well, which I'm really excited to get into. Tell us about why you launched Small Spark Theory in 2017. Why did you start it? What was going on in your business at the time? Let's start there.
Okay, well, thank you for those lovely compliments. I'd like to tell you that it was a really kind of strategic plan, but it was a bit of a happy accident, if I'm honest. So in 2016, my business was just coming up to 4 years old. So I'd been consulting for 4 years, working very specifically with agencies on their new business and marketing and client development strategies. So effectively, I work with agencies to help them attract, win, and grow new clients, but at a strategic level. So I don't do any lead generation for them, but I've had a career of agency new business. So in 2016, I was 4 years into to running Gunpowder, my consultancy, and it was probably the busiest year. It was, I had lots of clients. I had a mixture of clients that I was retained to support with their strategy. And that would often be looking at the proposition, building a sales and marketing strategy, helping them hire the right people to implement that strategy, as well as doing some very specific training and projects around client development. So it was the busiest year to date in 2016. And I guess...
We'll just make it even busier by starting a podcast.
Well, I think I was inspired by all of the conversations that I was having with agencies. And I think, you know, the background as well of two, nearly three decades of experiencing agencies who are going through the pain of new business, I'd started to see these patterns. And when I set up my consultancy, I was really trying to address these patterns of success and failure that I'd seen. A lot of things happened all at once in 2016. So I went to the London Business School TEDx and I saw Matthew Syed speaking. He'd just written his book, Black Box Thinking. And I found his thinking and I found that book really inspiring and listening to him talk. Now, he had worked with the Sky cycling team. So he'd worked alongside David Brailsford with the Sky cycling team. I'm a bit of a sports nerd. So I knew about this kind of marginal gains approach in cycling previously. But then something happened in the summer of 2016 when Team GB went to Rio for the Olympics. And there were... we did really, really well. We won loads of medals. And in all of those interviews, there were our brilliant Olympians crediting their success to the kit makers, the nutritionists, the physios, the all of these different people that had contributed to their success. And it really made me think, gosh, it's not just the Sky cycling team that's using this marginal gains approach. It's spreading across all of these elite athletes. They understand that it's not just about the training, it's about all of the small parts that go together to be able to get peak performance. And suddenly the penny dropped for me and I thought, this is a really interesting idea. One of the patterns that I've seen with agencies that are ostensibly small businesses who work, their businesses are structured on billable time. The difficulty they have with new business is that they don't build in enough time and energy for marketing their own businesses and attracting new clients. It often and consistently happens at a pain point, and then they use new business as a reaction to that pain point. And I'd seen that again and again and again. And obviously some of the bigger agencies, they can afford to have a team and be able to have a whole team that's dedicated to that the whole time. But for lots of smaller agencies, and there's a huge number of small agencies out there, they just don't have that ability or understanding of the new business process to be able to put it front and center in their business. And often they've grown through reputation and they hit a point where actually they need to go beyond their existing sphere of influence to be able to attract new new clients. So this idea of marginal gains, of thinking, right, rather than thinking, right, we've got to hire this super new business person and spend a load of money or you know, that there's this idea that, oh, well, new business people, they come in and they charge a lot of money and then we don't actually win any business and they don't do anything. And, you know, there's all of these sort of bad or negative perceptions around new business and new business activity, which is often quite uncomfortable for agency leaders. The idea of marginal gains suddenly struck me as being a method that I could help agency owners get their head around new business and how to make their businesses attractive. So it's not just about spending a load of money and hiring somebody that's going to go out and do it for you. Actually, you've got to be able to, there's no point in going out and, for example, spending a load of money on direct marketing or on Google ads if you send people to a website which doesn't actually articulate your offer properly. Or it's no good going to a lead generation agency and spending quite a lot of money on generating new business meetings if you're going to send people to those meetings who don't understand what a good new business meeting looks like. Now, they might sound like extreme situations, but they were the kind of things and behaviours that I was encountering again and again and again. So it occurred to me that this marginal gains approach and being able to nudge people in the right direction of just turning the dial on all the different elements of activity that are required and just get a little bit better might be an easier way to try and get some of those better behaviours in place. And I was struck by that idea and really excited to be able to get that conversation out there to the agency audience. So the podcast actually was never intended to be a podcast. It was very much about idea and theme first. And then, well, how do we get these? How do we get this conversation? How do we get that, this thinking out there? I can write, but I find it quite a painful process. So initially I had thought, okay, well, it's going to be maybe a series of blog posts. Actually, there's quite a lot of different parts to that conversation. There's a lot of marginal gains that we can make. Gosh, it might even be a series of blog posts that we end up turning into a book. And then my brilliant assistant, Izzy, who is now my podcast producer and an independent podcast producer, suggested creating a podcast, at which point I said, well, what's that?
You weren't aware of them before, or?
Well, I mean, I was, but to be honest with you, my experience of podcasting was, or listening to podcasts, was Serial. That was my entry point to listening to podcasts. And I used to listen to the Archers podcast.
That's a very high bar.
Yeah. So the Archers and Serial. There you go. That was my frame of reference. okay. So we had no idea what we were doing. And we did have a conversation that said, well, actually, are we a bit late to this? Because there were, as we started looking at it, there were lots of articles saying, are we at peak podcast?
Interesting.
But we decided just to go for it anyway, because there wasn't really anybody that was using that as a channel in our industry at the time. So yeah, we just got going and went for it and launched the first episode in January 2017.
There's so many things that I want to dig into there that you said. The first is that you said that at the time you were actually quite busy. It was one of the busiest years that you'd had in business.
Yeah.
And I'm almost thinking, why did you start the podcast? What was the business outcome that you were hoping to achieve from the podcast? A lot of people go into podcasting thinking that it will help them from a new business point of view. But was there a particular business outcome that you were looking for or you were hoping to achieve?
No, funnily enough. But actually, now you ask me that question. At the time, it was very much about, I just wanted to get the conversation out there. I felt really passionate about what I was doing. And I felt really passionate about the challenge that I was experiencing agency owners having day in, day out. And I was meeting new clients all the time that were having the same kind of challenges and thinking, there's got to be a better way. I need to be able, how can I get this message out there? So I felt I was just on a bit of a mission. The business outcome, honestly, was secondary. I mean, yes, the reality was that my business is all, I have a little bit of retained work, but it sort of switches between being mostly project led or mostly being retainer led. Even the retainers, probably might last for a couple of years, and they're kind of small, low level mentoring retainers. So, I rely on my reputation and the work that I do for clients and kind of word of mouth recommendations. I haven't done any lead generation for my own business since, which is kind of a bit counterintuitive, but I haven't needed to, because all of the business that I have has come in through my network or my associations with organizations like the Design Business Association. So this was less about the business outcome. This was more about feeling like I had a drum that I needed to bang, and I wanted to get the conversation going and try and move agencies out of this position of feeling that new business is something painful and something that you're not in control of, and move them into a place where they felt more comfortable with it, and it's something that they could be in the driving seat with. And just move away from some of the consistent kind of mistakes that I was seeing again and again. So yeah, it was more driven by the passion for the conversation than a real business outcome. And you know what they say, you know, if you want something done, give it to a busy person. When you're busy, you have right. that feeling of kind of invincibility. Yeah, we can do that. Let's just do it.
Sure, why not? Just throw it on the pile.
Too right.
What jumps out to me from hearing you say that, and the main takeaway for me, is that you're solving a real problem first. You were really driven by this desire of solving or helping to solve the problem of new business for small agencies. As you said, as you articulated really well, you know, a lot of new small agencies go into new business thinking that it's hard. I hire a consultant. They don't do anything for me. I obviously start thinking about new business at the point when I need it, which is often 3 or 4 months, 6 months, a little bit too late. So you're really sort of being proactive in helping to solve a real problem that your audience are facing. And the outcome of that is that it would attract an audience, it helped build a community. You're now how many years in? 6 years in, if not longer, my maths is really bad.
Just coming 2016, up seven years
in. Yeah. So by focusing on a genuine problem first and being really intentional about solving that problem and bringing different perspectives from practitioners and authors and other people around the agency space, you've been able to build a brand, build a community, indirectly, I would say, generate new business and leads for yourself, if not directly.
Yeah.
But it's that focus on what's the problem here that I'm solving for my audience.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. Yeah. Yeah. And it was very much
really fascinating.
I've talked to people over the years about podcasting or more broadly thought leadership, my advice has always been about it's about idea and message first and channel comes later. It was never about the intention to start a podcast. That would never have been the intention. It just seemed that actually it happened to be the right medium for the message.
Really interesting. Can you just give us an idea of how the podcast has resonated with your audience since you've started it?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think at the beginning I had absolutely no idea what to expect. And I would look at the download stats just really to make sure that I hadn't messed up and I had pressed all the right buttons and it was actually it was actually out there. I mean, the first thing to say is that very, very early on, I think it probably at the end of the first year, I got all of the guests together and we had lunch, which was a really lovely thing to do because to start with, I leaned on my network to invite friendly, interesting people. Thankfully, you know, starting a podcast in your 40s, and having been around the block a bit in the industry, I've got a pretty solid network. So I was able to utilize that in the first year. So I didn't really have to interview anybody that I didn't know, which was helpful. And I got everybody together for lunch at the end of that year and was really surprised that I think our fourth guest had been offered a book deal on the back of the conversation that we'd had. So that was 4 months in. So the podcast is only released monthly. We're pretty kind of old school and in the slow and steady camp. We didn't go for kind of weekly or daily, heaven forfend.
We'll come back to that later.
Yeah, we went for, so 4 episodes in, right at the beginning, the guest was offered a book deal by an agent who happened to be listening. Now, to this day, I have no idea how that agent found our tiny, tiny new podcast. but then, 3-4 years later, his book is published and he came back on to talk about that book, obviously. So I've got some lovely anecdotal evidence like that. And there have been other guests that have been on who have won business. They've either been consultants in a particular specialist field, and through talking about their area of expertise on the podcast, they have then won business through that. So that's a really, really lovely thing, because I've been very focused on the fact that I'm inviting guests on the podcast so that the listeners can hear their expertise and hear their perspective. So I'm showcasing their expertise and their perspective, and getting their take on some of the themes that I'm experiencing and I know that the listeners are experiencing. So the fact that they then go on to get some success or wider recognition through that process is really rewarding. Then I guess the other thing that happened in that first year was that I suddenly started being invited to speak at industry events. And yes, that had happened before, but nowhere near in the same volume. And I think, I can't remember whether it was 2017 or 2018, but I think I went through a phase of having 12 speaking gigs in quite a short space of time, which was wonderful, really, really wonderful. But all of that, and it occurred to me that all of that was through the podcast. And the beauty of the podcast is that anybody that's putting on an event, there's not going to be any surprises because they can listen to your podcast and they know what they're going to get. it's the best kind of, speaker profile. It's a kind of dynamic speaker profile. They can just tune in and listen and think, actually, yes, that's the kind of point of view or the kind of thinking that we want for our audience, for our event. So, yes, that's something that I wasn't really expecting, but that certainly happened in the certainly within the first 12 months. And then I think more broadly, over time, I can honestly say that the podcast is responsible for a large part of my business. So my new clients that come to me either have been recommended through my network or through the Design Business Association or other kind of industry associations, but through the podcast as well. And I think that's, again, if I think of attribution, it isn't necessarily just the podcast, it's how all of those things work together. So, for example, I will do training programs for the Design Business Association. When the DBA market those training programs, they also link into the podcast. Lots of the DBA members will listen to the podcast. So it's a combination of all of those things together that, and people have the opportunity to dip in and dip out of some of the conversations that I'm having so that when they do have a problem that they need some support with, I already feel familiar to them. And it's, I think, the same with my existing network. Rather than me having to keep sending them newsletters or just email them to keep in touch, they will listen to the podcast and then get in touch and say, oh, you were talking about client development or you were talking about public speaking or whatever it might be. Can we have a chat about that? So it just helps as a prompt to keep people, to keep people up to date with what I'm doing and I guess remind them who I are. So I think it just reinforces that kind of networking effect.
Mm. So do you think it reduces the time to sale? I mean, that's something, it's quite a crass term that is. And in B2B, it's a term that's used quite a lot. But the idea being that, is there a platform or a channel or a marketing strategy that we can use that can reduce the time that it takes to speak to a prospect, to develop a relationship with them and convert them into a new client. It almost feels as though what you're saying is that your brand has entered the room before you have, and your podcast has given the listener a chance to almost vet you and experience what it's like to work with you before actually putting their hand in the pocket.
Totally. I mean, you know, there is a pretty decent supply of new business consultants. That term covers a multitude of sins, but new business consultants, agency growth consultants, there's lots of people that are doing a similar thing. We all have a slightly different way of doing it, and we all have very different personalities. And I think for most of my clients, they work with me because of my personality and my approach. I have a very specific approach that is unique to me because it's who I am. And it's a very personal relationship that I have with my clients. You know, they're entrusting the growth of their agency and that strategy, they're entrusting me with that, and I take that very seriously. So they have to, that chemistry and that relationship has to be right. The podcast is perfect for people to be able to get a feel for whether or not I'm the right person. And that's why, you know, does it cut down that lead time? I really think it does. I think a lot of the people that come to me asking for my help, very, very rarely is it competitive. By the time they get in touch, it's very rare that they're talking to somebody else at the same time. So they've probably listened to a few episodes over a period of time, and it's started to kind of get them thinking. So by the time they get in touch, actually it's more about the, what are the practicalities? How does it work? How could we work together? What does it look like? Rather than, are you the right fit for us? And I think that works both ways as well.
Completely. I totally get that. We've established that the podcast has done really well for your business and for your consulting. Let's talk a little bit about this strategy and the thinking behind it. So what are the mechanics? If we lift the hood, what's going on under the bonnet? What's your process for choosing the right topics to discuss on your podcast that resonate with your audience? And how do you find the right guests that help you sort of explore that topic in new and interesting ways?
I'm slightly embarrassed to talk to you about this, Nathan, because you are now such a pro podcaster and you've been running podcasts for so many different organizations that I'm going to shock you now and say that actually it's totally chaotic. It's the first probably 6 months was really well thought through because we were very much in planning mode, and I was thinking very carefully about my network and the guests that we could get and what would work for the first few episodes. Since then, it was mostly me having an idea or going to an event, hearing somebody speak and thinking, oh my God, they would be brilliant, and just contacting them or bowling up to them and saying, hi, I love what you just said. I think I've got an audience that would be really interested. So I'll give you an example. And I think for me, it was, if I'm honest, I think at the beginning, I didn't want to approach the industry heavyweights who were, for example, already known in campaign or, you know, okay, all of the big, or in the drum. I wanted to, there are so many interesting people out there that have got interesting perspectives that I wanted to bring right, other voices to the conversation. And that was not just people from the agency sphere. So as an example, I went to a Business for Bohemians talk. It was an evening event. And the speaker at that event was a chap called Hilary Gallo, who's an ex-corporate lawyer. And he'd written a book on called The Power of Soft, all about negotiation and our preconceptions about what good negotiation looks like. And it was so compelling, and it really resonated with me. And I thought, oh gosh, I've got, you know, all of the agency owners that I've worked with who are predominantly creative people who feel really, really uncomfortable in those kind of, you know, negotiation scenarios. This approach of actually being soft in your negotiation, understanding in your core what it is that you want, allows you to be able to approach the negotiation in a softer way rather than the traditional way that we think of going in with a bit of armor. It immediately, I thought, great, everything that he's got to say is perfect for the audience. So I stalked him until he agreed to come on. So it was a combination of a little bit of planning and planning ahead, but also me randomly just hearing something on the radio or bumping into somebody or just catching. I'm a bit of a sponge for just randomly wandering around the internet or going to events and stumbling across conversations. And I was a bit of a magpie in finding interesting conversations and then stalking people. And that carries on to this day.
If I go back to what you said earlier about your positioning and solving problems for agencies, that's because you're very clear about who you're for, who you're not for, and what problem it is that you're solving, so that when you're out there and you overhear a talk or something on the radio, your brain is already attuned to finding those great stories.
Yes.
So that goes back to the idea of your positioning being really very important and the problem that you're solving with your content. I want to touch on what you said earlier about stalking or accosting people after they've been on stage or finding them.
Yeah.
What's your process for doing that? Like, if you want to get a high profile guest, maybe you're not connected with them, you don't have a relationship, how do you go about doing that?
I just, right, well, if it was in person, so in all those instances back in the day when I used to actually go to live things and go to events, then I would just go up to them afterwards and say, that was brilliant, really interesting, I would love to interview you, I've got a podcast, and just chat to them, just be normal. I say stalking, I'm saying that slightly tongue in cheek. I don't actually stalk people. Yeah. I'm just normal and nice to them, hopefully.
Right.
And nobody has said no. Nobody has said no. So hopefully that's worked. I think but actually, if I think about it, it's like new business. If you are authentic in your genuine interest and you have a genuine opportunity, then the conversation becomes easy. And it's whereas if you are unsure of what you can offer and you don't have a genuine interest, then that's when it's hard work. And I think it's the same thing for new business as it is to approaching guests. I would say I've made that all sound very easy. One of the things that I really, really am mindful of and have struggled with is having a diverse range of speakers. So as the podcast has grown or over the years, as we've gone on, and obviously we've had a pandemic in the middle of that, I stopped going pretty much to networking events. I've moved out of London. So my access to new people is slightly different. However, because the podcast has been going longer, I get lots and lots of speakers pitched to me, either directly or through agents. The majority of agent approaches, the pitches aren't relevant at all to the audience or to the podcast, with one exception. But what I do struggle with is making sure that I've got a really diverse range of guests. If I didn't work at it, my guest profile would be wall-to-wall male. And pale.
Male, white, middle class. Pretty easy to do.
Yeah. So I have to actively, and it's not to say that those conversations aren't valid. They are still valid. For me to want to entertain them, they are all still valid. But I have to work quite hard to go out and find other voices to bring to the podcast. And that's my, you know, that's up to me to do it. And still the balance isn't right. I need to work harder at that. The balance isn't right. But the people that are actively promoting themselves are male. And so I need to work much harder to be proactive in finding those alternative voices.
Yeah. So just to wrap things up, as you think about the number of podcasts that are out there now and how time-starved people are, and how much content, not only podcasts, but content of all types that's out there right now, how do you think about standing out, getting attention today in a much more sort of busy, compelling, oversaturated podcast market?
Yeah, good question. I suppose my answer to that is probably going right back to the beginning of where we started and thinking, for anybody that's thinking of putting their toe in the water, think less about the podcast and think more about the conversation and the conversation that you want to put out into the world. That's the most important thing. And if you really believe in that, and if you have a real passion for that, and you feel like it's a conversation that needs having, then it will find its audience. And, you know, like you, I work with agencies who are now creating their own podcasts as part of their marketing strategies. And I often get asked the question, but hang on a minute, you know, how are we going to get in the you know, the top of the league table? And I always say to them, you don't need to be competing with Stephen Bartlett. This doesn't need to be Diary of a CEO. It just needs to find your audience. It needs to be relevant for your audience. So don't worry too much about the numbers. It's about the relevance that's important. And, you know, again, if it's a conversation that's worth having, and that you're really passionate about and believe is solving problems or touching on issues that other people are thinking about, then it will find its audience. But don't think of it in terms of needing to compete.
Well said. Lucy, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you being on the show.
You're welcome. Really lovely to see you. Thank you for asking me.
This is Influence is a production of Bridge Growth, the B2B podcasting agency. I could not produce this show without our crack staff here at Bridge. Kimmy Sylvester is our production assistant. Krzysztof Błaszczyk is our executive producer. I'm Nathan Anibaba. You've been listening to This is Influence.